Can't we all just get along? After listening to that CBS News and all the fistfights in Congress, oh my, is all I say. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, and we are welcoming you to our program. It's the Buckmaster Show, hosted by me, Bill, on Tuesday, November the 14th, 2023. The naming rights to our studio go to Green Things in Zocalo Village. We love them. They're at 10. They've got that 13-acre site, everything you need for the garden. We are on 1030 KVOI. Tucson's voice for trusted local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening. Yes, you can listen to the program live on my website, buckmastershow.com, but there's a heck of a lot more, like almost 13 full years of podcasts there on our website. When we do our telephone interviews, we'll be doing a couple today presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Today, we resume our every other month interview series presented by Pima Community College. Our series introduces our listeners to the dedicated educators and supporters of Pima Community College. With us on the live line, Teresa Rial, the chair of the Pima Community College Governing Board. Teresa, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How about yourself?
Doing well. I want to get an update. Chancellor Lee Lambert left after about, I think he was with the college about 10 years. He moved on last spring and started a new position up in the Bay Area as chancellor at the Foothill De Anza Community College. But now we're at the position, or in the position, we need a chancellor. What's the update, Teresa, on what's going on?
So finding a new chancellor is the number one responsibility of any community college board. And so we have been working on that. Our chancellor left the end of June. We selected an acting chancellor, which turned into the interim chancellor, Dr. Dolores Duran-Cerda. And the reason we voted to make her the interim chancellor is we decided instead of spending time and energy finding an interim, we should just keep her on board. She's part of the college. She's been a part of the college for 17, 20 years, something like that. And so we decided just to focus all of our energy into finding a search firm to help us vet and go through the applications of interested applicants. And then we have a committee to do that, and we have a second committee to look through all of those applications. So we expect, the board expects the first committee that is finding the search firm for us, we expect at our December 4th study session that we are going to have names of those search firms, and the board will be choosing a search firm to help us search for the chancellor at the December 4th meeting.
This is a huge deal, isn't it, trying to find a new chancellor?
Well, yeah, for many reasons, right?
Yeah.
It's a huge job, right? So
yeah,
to find the right person who has the skills to work with the community members, the business members, the college, folks in the college, the faculty, staff, administration, the students, you know, it takes somebody with a wide range of skills, and we want to make sure we find that right person. I think, in my opinion, Pima Community College, Southern Arizona, Tucson in general, we're going to have a lot of really amazing applicants for this job.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a very attractive job. Would there be, you mentioned the interim, has she expressed interest in perhaps applying for the job, the chancellor job?
I think, yes, she's made that known that she is interested in applying. So she has removed herself from any conversations that we've had because she does want to apply for that job. So, yeah, she's going to be one of the many who do apply.
So what does the timetable look like on this? You're going to get the search firm. They'll start producing, I'm sure, a lot of qualified candidates. What are you kind of thinking about timeline-wise?
We would like to have the new chancellor, the board would like to have the new chancellor on board the beginning of next school year. So that's, 9 months is what we're looking at. Sometimes they take longer than that. And if it does, we're okay with that also. But we would like to have the new person on board by the beginning of the school year, August 2024.
So the board, will there be like public input as well, like one the finalists? I imagine there probably will be when you narrow it down to a couple of candidates.
Right. So I think what's going to happen, we have a committee that we just voted on our last board meeting, our last regular board meeting. And I think there are 24, I believe there are 24 people from all over the community, internal constituents, external constituents. And those people are going to meet to go through the applications, go through, figure out and present to the board, their top, I'm going to say 5 to 8 choices. Now, the board, we have discussed internally, we are going to try to go with that, right? Because that consensus agreement between all of the interested groups is super important. And so hopefully there is that one special person that's going to meet all of our requirements. And then we will have, for the top 3 or 4, my guess is we're going to have forums, community forums, where we will have those candidates either come in personally or participate remotely via Zoom or Google Meet, something like that. And we'll have many different forums where the different groups in the community, different stakeholders, different faculty, staff, students, administrators will be part of that process to ask the pertinent questions to make sure we get the best match for Pima College.
We're speaking with Teresa Rial, who is the Pima Community College Governing Board Chair. We're talking about now the search really getting cranked up for a new chancellor. So when we do get a new chancellor, what will this new chancellor inherit? What kind of condition is the college in right now, Teresa?
I think the college is in great shape. We recently had a report from our CFO, and it shows that financially we're in really, really good shape. I think that the report that we had recently from the Higher Learning Commission showed that many of the things that the college had been accused of recently, they don't find any corroborating evidence. In fact, they find evidence to show just the opposite. So we have a visit from the HLC coming up in December. And I think that the college is working really, really hard on making sure that we can show the HLC that the areas in which they were concerned that we are either meeting or exceeding those expectations of serving our students and serving our community well. The college is, the college is having forums once a month, and they're at rotating sites. They are also virtual meetings, combination live and virtual. So anybody who wants to be part of those to offer evidence to how the college is meeting the requirements of the HLC, those 5 criterion. So those two things currently on our plate of what we're working on, I think that the new chancellor will be not having to work with those same, I don't want to say obstacles, but those same objectives, right? So I think the chancellor that's coming in, we want to continue our mission with the Centers of Excellence. We want to increase enrollment. We want to make sure that that Hispanic Serving Institution label that we have, that we actually are meeting those needs of our Hispanic students and the Hispanic population that aren't yet our students. We want to make sure that they have this amazing opportunity at the college also.
Well, that is good news about the Higher Learning Commission. So the new chancellor may not have to worry about those challenges that have been facing the previous chancellor. So I think that sounds pretty optimistic, Teresa.
Yeah, it's, I think, you know, each day we work on making the college a better place to serve the students and the community, and through the Centers of Excellence, our amazing educational opportunities. I think it is a really a great place to be right now in Southern Arizona, being able to attend Pima Community College.
Sounds like it. Teresa Riel. Thank you, Teresa, for the update.
Thank you. And one more plug, if I may.
Go ahead.
NJ National Junior College Athletic Association is having their soccer championships.
Okay.
And your Pima Community College team is playing this evening at 5:30 at the Kino Sports Complex. So anybody who wants to come out and see some great soccer, we'd love to have you cheer on the Pima Aztecs.
Well, it sounds like they're quite the team to be at this level.
Yeah, they ranked fifth right now, and
Whoa.
We'll see. Their game they played last night, it was 5-1, super, super entertaining, super energetic. It was an amazing game. So hopefully, this is one of the seeds going up into the top four games for the champions. So hopefully they do great tonight, and we'll be moving on up the ladder.
Good luck to these fine student athletes. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the call, Bill.
All right. For more information about Pima Community College, I encourage all of our listeners, check it out, pima.edu. All right. Mona's Danish Bakery, getting all cranked up for Thanksgiving. I got to put in a call, actually, to Mona's. I'm going to need a couple of dozen dinner rolls for kind of the Buckmaster Bungalow potluck that we're doing in Ann's honor. On Thanksgiving. So I'll join you and a bunch of other listeners who are going to be making those orders to Steve and the team up at Mona's, not just for the dinner rolls, which are fantastic, but of course, dessert. What kind of dessert do you want? Traditional pumpkin? Do you want to go the cherry route or whatever they've got a great selection. So put in that order. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, Mona's Danish Bakery, open right now for lunch. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. Shelly Fishman, if Shell was with me in studio right now, he'd be giving me the most enthusiastic two thumbs up because it has been a really good day on the market. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And if Shelley Fishman was with me in studio right now, he'd have a huge smile on his face. He is on our live line. Hello, Shelley.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
Doing well. I'm very happy with the numbers I'm seeing out of Wall Street today.
Well, you know, that kind of came as a little bit of a surprise. What we got from the Department of Labor is some numbers on inflation that were better than expected. So the popular measure of inflation went down from 3.7 to 3.2% on an annualized basis. And that combined, I think, with some optimism on the part of the potential for a continuing resolution in Congress to continue the government for another couple of months was viewed by the markets in general very positively. We've been up about 500 points on the Dow all day.
Well, things are sort of chugging along, and this is giving us a little breathing room for the markets.
Well, you know, let's talk about that for a second, because I ran these numbers this morning, so they don't count today's gains. But the Dow year-to-date is up 3.6%. We could probably call it 5% with today's numbers. When I go back a full 12 months, it's only up about 4%. The S&P, which is, you know, the broader indicator, is up 14.4, let's call it 16% now for the year. The NASDAQ, buckle your seatbelts, up 34% for the year.
What?
And, yep, and the bond, general bond market, is up about 4% for the year, so it's recovered nicely from a year ago. You know, this has all the indicators of a pretty good year.
Wow. I'm very pleased with those numbers. That let's keep our fingers crossed here for the remaining 6 weeks or so. Shell, if you don't have any more on that, I do want to remind people about the current enrollment period for Medicare and Obamacare. And I tell you what, my mailbox has had plenty of reminders in that department.
Yeah, it's kind of like a tsunami of reminders. And I'm glad we brought it up again. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. The open enrollment period, or the enrollment period, is through December 7th for Medicare, and that includes any changes you make in your existing plans or re-enrolling in an Advantage plan. The reason I'm concerned about it is because there have been some reports that people's information, personal information, is being misused when they make a call and are asked for their personal information, and they give them the information, and then they find out that information is in places where it shouldn't be.
Really? That's not good.
Yeah. So you know, keep in mind when these companies are advertising the changes in, let's call it Medicare Advantage, they are giving you a number to call. You're calling them. You don't really know who they are. In most cases, that's public information, and it's being broadcast on you know, television and radio stations. So the likelihood that it's not legitimate is pretty low. But, you know, when you're also getting emails, if you call these places, then you have no idea whether these places are legitimate. And they're going to greet you with a licensed insurance professional who's there to sell you something. Nothing wrong with that. But if they're also there to steal your data, you got to be very, very careful, Bill. So my advice to people always is, if it seems to be in your best interest to change plans or to get more information about the plans for 2024, my coaching is always use an independent licensed broker here in Tucson. But if you don't do that and you call one of these places, then don't give them any information over the phone. Listen to what they have to say. Have them email to you what you know you talk about. Make sure you print the information that you're emailed. Make sure that when you sign it, that you can sign it electronically. But I would, in all cases, ask for the insurance licensing information of the person you're talking to, and be very careful about giving anybody information over the phone. If you've got that information in writing and you can return it by mail to an address that is the name of the insurance company that you're deciding to go with, that's probably the safest way to do it. The enrollment period is open through December 7th, so time is kind of the essence now, but please be careful out there. There are just so many scams.
Yeah, and going back to what you said, their independent agent, at least from my personal point of view, is the way to go, and we've got some very good ones right here in Tucson, right, Shelley?
We really do, and they're not tied to any one insurance company. As a result, you can, you know, get the best mix of doctors on your plan. You can make sure that the doctors you currently use are on the in-network list of doctors on the plan that you're looking at. There are just so many things that you have to be conscious of. The other thing to be conscious of, especially with Advantage plans, is Advantage plans, which are called Medicare Part C, include Medicare Part D in their plans, but they're not all the same. So if you have prescription medications that you're taking, it's important to make sure that you review the formularies of the insurance companies you're looking at so you're assured of getting the best deal for renewing your prescriptions.
Shell, can we circle back real quickly to the markets? I wanted to ask you, with this drop now to 3.2%, the annualized rate of inflation, does that seem to indicate that another rate hike will be highly unlikely before the end of the year, in your opinion?
That is perfectly said by you. It is highly unlikely, and in fact, the percentage that the bookies are taking for another increase in the first or second quarter of next year is only 26%. So that the general feeling among professionals right now is that the Fed will hold tight. They'll take a look at the not only the inflation numbers, but also to make sure that bond yields are producing the kind of results that they need them to produce to continue to slow the economy a bit. Remember, the economy, the last GDP number was way above what anybody predicted. It was at 4%, and we know that's not going to hold for the year, but that, you know, was a potential source of alarm for the Fed. So right now, all the good money is that in the December meeting of the Open Market Committee, that we won't see a rate increase by the Fed for this year. We'll have a couple of meetings next year, and the overwhelming majority of opinion is that the Fed will back off for now.
A drop of a half a percentage point over 1 month seems pretty substantial to me. Is that the way you look at it?
Yeah, it is substantial, but let's not get carried away.
Okay.
You know, you get a month here, a month there. You can't look at it from month to month. You really do have to look at it from quarter to quarter, or even, you know, more time than that, because various things, you know, get measured in a particular period. For instance, rentals did go down, but food went up. So, you know, depending upon what you depend upon for your, you know, just the way you live your life, your inflation observation may or may not be consistent with what the statistics say. In general, however, we can say that the Fed is getting what they're looking for, and that's a good thing, and the market seems to agree.
All right, sounds good. Shelley, thank you very much. Have a great rest of the week. Shelley Fishman.
You too, Bill.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. My poinsettia is I watered them this morning, just like Jack told me to do, Jack and Jan, the owners, at Green Things. They said, give them a pretty good soaking. Take them over to the sink. Soak them for, a few minutes, and then every couple of days. They are a tropical plant. I told a little bit about my tour yesterday. Sunday, I was over at Green Things. I just can't believe it. They've got greenhouse after greenhouse of their poinsettias. They raised 21,000 of these beautiful plants in some really interesting colors. And I got a couple of them along with what they call a Christmas cactus, which is really nice. It's in full bloom, pink blooms, and that is kind of the centerpiece for our Buckmaster Bungalow potluck that we're doing on Thanksgiving in Anne's memory. About 10 people are going to bring all the fixins up to our place, so we're going to have a nice Thanksgiving. But it looks really nice. I've got that Christmas cactus there from Green Things. Anyway, stop by Green Things. They've got all your holiday decorating available. They are located at 3384 East River Road. All right, let's move on here. Our live line, by the way, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Jeff Silvertooth is our contributor on agriculture. We've got about 24 people who regularly contribute to the program, and I always learn something from all 24. We have them on usually about once a month, some are on even more. Dr. Silvertooth is professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science in the Department of Environmental Science at the University of Arizona. He served on the UA faculty. Let's put it this way. Jeff didn't get off the bus yesterday. He arrived in town in 1987, beat me by about 1 year. I came in January of 88. Dr. Silvertooth has been recognized as a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy and Soil Science Society of America. And Jeff knows just about all of the players in the ag scene, certainly here in Arizona. Dr. Silvertooth, always a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you, Bill. It's good to be here. Appreciate it.
I want to begin with an op-ed I saw in the Wall Street Journal. This was put together by a couple of the representatives of the Kyle, named for the former senator, John Kyle. There is a Kyle Center for Water Policy up at ASU, and they put together an op-ed, these two individuals. The headline is, Phoenix is in no danger of running out of water. Basically, they're saying farmers in Arizona use far more of the water than the residents do, so demand declines, they say, as population grows. And I guess their thinking is the more subdivisions you put in and taking away from ag land, that actually you're going to use less water. I've not really heard that argument before.
Well, that is true to a certain extent, in that they take ag lands out. That land is no longer consuming that water for crop production. And you can, you know, put more people per unit area and support them on that amount of water than you can, say the crops. That's true. But on the other hand, each of us require the production of crops for our own survival in itself. So that's where the conundrum comes in as to how we balance that out. But there are points, you know, not, it's well taken, but I don't see it as being very profound, in that we have recognized for quite some time, and it's right up front, of all the water, fresh water that's diverted in this state for utilization, 70% goes to agriculture. That's true on the Colorado River, Bill. 70% of the water on the Colorado River goes to ag, both in the upper and lower basin collectively. Sounds like a lot in the United States,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it sounds like a lot.
It sounds like a lot. But you put it in a global perspective, 70% of the water on the planet goes to agriculture. Now, nobody's doing this for sport. They're doing it for a reason, in that there are markets, and the reason there are markets is there's a demand.
Like to feed people?
Exactly.
I mean, this is not just done for recreational purposes.
Right. Yeah, you take that water, start out on a global scale and bring it back to Arizona. Most of that water, that 70%, is being utilized in arid and semi-arid regions between the 32 degrees north and south latitude, like where we are. And it's producing 65% of the grain production on the planet. we have about half the population, almost half the population lives within that zone on the planet. And you have about 45% of the total crop production taking place there. The other thing, too, along with that, is that we have reliable crop production in those areas because of the water. You have rain-fed agriculture, and it suffers the vagary of the weather very directly. We do indirectly. It takes a little while for us to hit that pressure point because of the reservoirs we have. But in out where I come from in the southern plains, if you have a dry year, you just don't have anything.
And in every, that would be rain-driven agriculture,
yes,
where you're from?
Yes, sir,
okay.
Primarily. There's a mix, but yeah, primarily. Mm-hmm. And out across the Great Plains, and that's the difference in irrigated agriculture. You can consistently produce it if you have water, and we produce some of the highest quality crops in the world. We produce more per unit acre than anywhere else in the world, per unit area.
You're saying the efficiency here is almost second to none.
That's right. It is. And, of course, we've got a lot of pressure to improve efficiencies. We exert a lot of pressures on ourselves internally within the agriculture community to conserve water, to be more efficient as a function of stewardship and just a function of economics. But it's really important for us to recognize that. So these folks point out, make a good point, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's very profound, but, you know, what they're trying to do is educate people, like putting that in the Wall Street Journal, and I'm trying to do the same thing. Maybe I'm not.
Well,
as
you know what they're
that.
They're countering the front page piece in the New York Times, which is kind of, people point to that a couple of months ago as a landmark piece that Phoenix. Basically, the headline was Phoenix is running out of water.
Right,
and
yeah.
Now you're starting to see
right.
these kinds of counter
right.
pieces.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and I would say I would agree with that as well. You know, even when we look at the Colorado River, that's gone down, say, almost 30%. In terms of its flow rate, it's down to about 12.4, 12.3 million acre feet, where it was about 15 and a half there for many years, been the 20th century. In the past two decades, it's dropped off to about 12.3, 12.4 million acre feet. So if we take that amount of water and you say, there's still water to support the cities. But then the question comes back, what do the cities have to do to be able to get the other supplies to support themselves, such as dairy products, food products, et cetera. You're going to basically make yourself dependent on external sources completely. Don't think that's strategically very good, particularly if you look at sustainability and food security. You know, so we have those kinds of issues. They don't bring that up, of course.
No, they don't.
But there's more to the
story. They don't bring
story.
Up the point that we do need some of these agriculture products
right.
big time.
Right.
It, yeah.
You know, and this goes on to like a cascading series of criticisms that people come with. What about this? What about
but
that?
But you do see now the pointing, the finger pointing. Let's blame ag.
Well, sure. Yeah, that's natural. You know, that's natural. And it's easy. It's easy to do. And it's very simplistic, honestly. It's very simplistic. And, you know, I think people that do that are well-intended, just not well-informed, fully well-informed. Or they choose just to ignore some facts.
And some of them are blaming the type of crops that we're producing. Maybe we better not go there. But,
well,
but that, yeah, it's happening.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah.
You know, I've always worked with crops in the state that have been demonized, things like cotton. And now the alfalfa's public enemy number one with these
folks. With the Saudi issue.
And then compounded by the fact that it's being grown by Saudis.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we had our own attorney general come out and say a few weeks ago, and that was published in this paper here in Tucson, as well as several other venues across the state and region, that anyone growing alfalfa, well, that's just stupid. Well, you know, there is, again, another case where I think she was well-intended,
mm-hmm.
but just not well-informed. And, of course, mm-hmm. a person can't be, you know, well-informed about everything, but they ought not to be pontificating too heavily on it if they don't know the full story. And so I've been involved in that as well in terms of like, well, why do we produce so much alfalfa in this state? What's the merits of this crop?
Okay, it uses a lot of water, but what are the merits?
There's quite a nice list. Matter of fact, I just put out an article on that. But you know, you can start with it like this. It's salt tolerant. It's heat tolerant. It grows very well. It's high productive. There's a strong market because of the animals, particularly dairy and beef cattle production. We have most of the dairy products and United States are delivered within 300 miles of the point of production for fresh dairy products. And so we in Arizona we realize the benefits of local alfalfa production that supports the dairy cattle that produce the milk, that produces the milk and the other dairy
so
products.
So the cows eat the alfalfa.
Alfalfa, absolutely. That's a high nutritious product.
But I'm sure if you asked maybe the average person, why are we growing alfalfa? They may not see that connection.
Well, they don't.
To the cows.
They don't. And the fact is, all those same people you'd ask that question of, they are consuming alfalfa. They just don't know it. They're secondary consumers. You like ice cream, yogurt, cheese, butter on your toast. Well, you like that type of stuff. And so the other things that alfalfa does for us agronomically is it really doesn't produce or take more water than, say, a lettuce crop on a daily basis. But if we grew something like, you know, these vegetable crops, which we consider being more or lesser in water demand, it's just that they have a very shortened season. And you have alfalfa that grows year-round. It's a perennial crop.
Is it easy to grow?
Pretty much. You know, there's challenges with any of these crops, but it's well adapted to this region, and it grows very well here. And it can grow through these summers and take the heat and the salt, the salinity tolerance, and produce very well, very, very productive and highly nutritious feed for these animals at the same time. Agronomically, it's good for us if you have folks that are like supporters of regenerative agriculture and this type of, say, agronomic approach to crop management. Well, that's a perfect crop. It's a legume, deep-rooted. It helps soil tilth. It helps soil structure. It fixes nitrogen naturally. Any of us know in agriculture, we follow an alfalfa crop or a crop like that, soil conditions are going to be enhanced and improved.
You're saying it's environmentally sound.
Absolutely. It uses a lot of water over the course of a full year growing in this desert because it's a perennial crop. It grows all year round.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's pause right here. We've got a lot more with Dr. Jeffrey Silvertooth from the University of Arizona, UA agronomist. We'll be right back, Buckmaster, with you on a Tuesday afternoon.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. You know, this time of year is perfect over in New Mexico. Their temperatures have been really looking good. Yeah, it's a little chilly because of the elevation of about 5,000 to 7,000 feet. But it's, you know, put a sweater on. Put a turtleneck on. And do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Maybe a down vest would work, and it's invigorating when you get out in the cool weather. I mean, my goodness, after the summer that we have endured here in southern Arizona, wow. I, for one, will be so happy to see 2023 in the rearview mirror, but that's another story. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, only about a three-hour drive from Tucson. Check out their website maybe before you hop in the car or jump in the truck or on the motorcycle, southwestnewmexico.org. Jeff Silvertooth is with us, and we always enjoy Dr. Silvertooth, and Dr. Silvertooth knows that area of southwestern New Mexico, and we've kind of touched on this before, chili production. But, you know, I don't want to knock New Mexico, but Arizona does a pretty fine chili, don't they, Jeff?
We do. Actually, we have a relatively small acreage of chili production in southeast Arizona. It says good chili production is a function of elevation out here in the desert. So we grow that chili effectively at about 4,000 feet above elevation, and that's southeast Arizona, Sulphur Springs Valley, and all across southern New Mexico, far west Texas, and northern Chihuahua.
Yeah, they've got the elevation.
Perfect conditions for that New Mexico-type chili. Uh-huh. New Mexico-type chili is what I'm referring to.
Yeah.
And in Arizona, we have the seed company, Curry Chili and Seed Company.
I've heard of that.
Down here in southeast Arizona, that they produce, Ed Curry, the breeder and farmer, the manager of that company, they produce the seed that goes into about 98% of the green chili industry here. We call the hatch green chilies.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's good, really good green chili. Most of it goes for processing. Some of it goes out to the fresh market.
Are they
market.
Down in Tumacacori or Santa Cruz
connected
County?
Connected with that.
Yeah.
That's Santa Cruz Chili Company.
Yeah,
and Ed's father and Jeannie, the lady that owns that company, they were partners in it originally, where Ed's father was producing the chilies, and it was going over to them for sales.
Wow.
And they still have a chili plant to make salsa and stuff down there at the farm.
I bet that's good.
Yes, it is good. And they ship, they provide the chilies to Santa Cruz Chili, as I understand right now. So there's a connection there.
Wow, you know so many people. And you would, you know, you've been around the ag industry since 1987.
Almost 40 years now. Yeah.
When you first came to Arizona, did you like it or did you find it was an acquired taste?
Both. It was very different from where I came from.
From Oklahoma.
Yeah, definitely. It's another world. And I think you have to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it immediately.
You did?
Yeah, I liked it immediately. I liked the landscapes.
And the campus was so different.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I came back after going my undergraduate work in the 60s at the UA, but I came back in 88 for my work there at Public Broadcasting. And the campus was still relatively small.
Yeah.
When you look.
Yeah, it's changed a lot for sure. Everything's changed a lot. Arizona's changed a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we've doubled in size and population, and Tucson's doubled in size of more in population since that time. Of course, we're all still driving on the same roads, and that's another story in itself. But
what about drinking water?
Yeah, we still have good water, and we're going to as long as our infrastructure holds up.
And what is your opinion on some people are freaking out about the retreated wastewater for our drinking water?
Right. Well, that's an interesting perception.
Do you think we have to go that way pretty much? Or
we're going to eventually.
Yeah.
We're going to, particularly in arid regions, and we can do it. I'm actually familiar with the people, the engineers and the environmental scientists, chemists, physicists that have worked on that technology and tested it, and it's good. It's solid. If we can, you know, we don't think about it, but we're actually drinking treated water a lot of times already. Mm-hmm. If you and I have traveled to a lot of cities in the United States, New Orleans is a classic example, at the bottom of the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm.
We pull water out of a tap there and drink a glass of water. It's good water, but that water is coming out of the Mississippi, and I think it's been used and reused, and there's been cycling, and all kinds of stuff added to that river up and down the chain, including a lot of municipalities. And so we're retreating water and reconsuming it again, recycling it repetitively. I mean, we can do that effectively. It's just the same thing as like desalinization in a lot of ways. As a matter of fact, yeah.
Desal, we've talked about this before in the past. It's so expensive to get desal water over here, isn't it?
It's energy yeah. dependent. It's energy hungry because you have to push that water through a membrane to remove the solutes, the salts.
And then there's a lot of waste, right?
And you have to deal with the waste. That's the brine that comes out of that.
Yeah.
Actually, I saw a proposal presented about a month or two ago with some folks looking at some new technology where the desal systems are put underwater on the seabed of the ocean off the coast, and the natural pressures at that depth will move the water through the membranes, and they can extract and deal with the brine under those conditions much more easily. So it's a concept.
So would that make sense for a coastal city, perhaps?
Yeah, it would, yeah. If it comes to fruition. But it's things like that we're going to see the technologies being improved. But right now, desal is not cost prohibitive necessarily, because some places around the world use it quite extensively, but it is expensive. It's pretty because of the energy requirements.
Are there going to be any more restrictions on agriculture in 2024 in Arizona? Are these new proposed rules, are they a little more liberal as far as maybe kicking the can, the can down the road? Don't have to worry about it right now.
Right. I think we have to think about that, Bill, and respond to that question in two different realms. One is with the surface water, and it's probably most emblematic with the Colorado River. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably what you're asking about.
Yes, the Colorado River water.
Yes, sir. And I think that will be better for us this year than last year, because we're going to be dealing with what we call Tier 1 reductions on the drought contingency plan. That's been declared by the Bureau of Reclamation in August for 2024 operating plans. That's because we have the benefit primarily of a wet winter last year. So we had good return into the reservoirs.
We were below Tier 1, weren't we, for a while then?
Well, we were.
We were still within Tier 1.
We're within Tier 1. That's 1075 as we go over that. But right now the projections are we'll stay within Tier 1 just barely by the projections. But the Bureau has declared that for the operational base on this next year. So we will have 512,000 acre-feet cut out as we did in 2022. And so we go back to that level. And then, of course, what we're waiting for is the negotiations to go on in the next 2 years, because all those guidelines expire. Those drought contingency plans and all the guidelines associated with dealing with that expire in 2026 and have to be renegotiated. So right is enough to kind of kicking a can down the road, so to speak. And we don't anticipate this drought to be relieved, this 23 years worth of drought. And we have to live with that. So probably for this year, it's a little breathing room for the future. Who knows? And the other category we have to consider, and it's getting more and more attention, is with groundwater in this state.
I wanted to circle back, and I've only got a minute or so. We started our conversation about up in Phoenix. They've got this new deal going on, build-to-rent housing developments in urban areas. That's really taking off in the Phoenix area. And they're trying, because I don't know if they feel that they don't need to meet the state requirements for having an assured 100-year water supply if they do this build-to-rent.
There's realtors and there's developers, I should say, that have been trying to find the loopholes in that 1980 Groundwater Management Act.
Yeah.
And it's things like that they've been doing. What the interests are among a lot of the people in the political arena right now is to try to tighten that and a lot of people advocate for us to move to like an addition to the 1980 Groundwater Management Act. And there's a lot of action there in that whole array, and that affects a lot of the groundwater we have out in the state as well. But yeah, that's a good example, Bill, of how people have gotten around that, and why we have water that's been promised to different entities like multiple times, and you can't do that. That's it looks nice on paper, but there's not wet water that you can spread around like that.
But that really is happening. That's kind of the new, I don't know if it's come to Tucson yet, but it's really big up in Phoenix. It's called build to rent housing developments. All right, Dr. Silvertooth, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you in December, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Bill.
And
appreciate
it. Hope you have a great Thanksgiving.
You too. Thank you.
All right. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Professor Silvertooth and John, who always does such a nice job for us on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our program, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.